And I don't think if a person really feels something for his own religion, I don't think all these extra curricular white men lying to change, you know, a person's attitude. I really don't think so. I mean, even I, as I said, even I've gone to college, it still hasn't affected my thinking in any way. Not the language. I still, still very dear to me. I think it will be, regardless of how much education I get. Because as I said, I've seen for myself what the white man's world hasn't seen of the individual. And it's really made me believe it. I even surprised my philosophy teacher time when I told him that I was really gung-ho about my religion. He looked at me like, you're an educated person, Doc. I mean, you're not supposed to believe in these superstitious ideas anymore. I just, to me, they're not superstition. To me, they're real, because I've seen and heard for myself. And it's not all black magic, I tell myself. So, the way I feel about it.
Sessions with your children. I've written on the board a song, and the three lines are all the same. To a great many people, American Indian music is just like this on the board. It's all the same. And this is so far from the truth that I want to bring out to you this afternoon some of the rhythmic elements, some of the lyrical elements, some of the dance elements of American Indian culture that you can use in your classroom. We're going to learn this song, and by the way, there's no indication here as to which tribe it might be, as to which language it might be. These are only English letters which are attempting to take the vocables out of an Indian song and put them in a presentable form. The song itself is a Seneca Indian rabbit dance song. And just to look at it on the board, hey ya, 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 hey ya. Not much, but it's a good song, because the American Indian made music from little of nothing. Part of a tree with a skin tied over it, a gourd, which he grew out in his fields, filled with seeds, hollowed out. Lately, bells tied onto the ankle. This is a Hopi gourd rattle. The membrane of an animal. This is the intestine of an animal, dried, filled with seeds. This is a Sioux Indian rattle. Do we have any more chairs around? There are some in the adjoining room. If you could bring in a chair, then you could be comfortable. Now, let me sing this song for you. Seneca song. They sing it today on the Tonawanda Reservation in New York, and it's a delightful song. The young man who taught it to me, the Seneca young man from New York by the name of David Gordon, and he sang in our chorus at the Institute, the Yapaha Indian Chanters, and after being there for 2 years, he married one of the girls in the chorus. So I guess it's a dangerous song to sing. With these English words to it. But let me sing it for you again. We're going to learn this song. We're going to do the rabbit dance, just like the Senecas do in New York. I'm not Seneca. My tribe is Quapaw and Cherokee. I'm from Oklahoma. The Quapaws are a southern branch of the Hunkpapa Sioux, and the Cherokees are one of the five civilized tribes from North Carolina. My father was a cowboy and my mother was an Indian, so I guess I'm a product of the great wide open west. But they were both Indians. Now, music is my specialty. I'm a composer, but I also work with young people in the classroom singing Indian songs, and this is what I love to do, because I think that Indian music, Indian culture, Indian dance has a great potential in the classroom of all of our schools in America or all over the world. I do want to call your attention to this article which appeared in the Music Educators Journal, the March issue, last month. This is the music branch of the National Education Association, known as the Music Educators National Conference. Dr. Gilman has reprinted this, and she's going to make that available to all of you. The young man on the cover is Conroy Greendeer, a Winnebago young man majoring in music at the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe. And in the article itself, I go on to explain how Indian music can be used from kindergarten through the 12th grade, and even in professional choirs, so that it can offer a contribution to our musical literature, to our music education practices and procedures, and can be a very viable and living and exciting part of your classroom experiences. You need not be an expert Indian singer, a chanter, so to speak. There are certain parts of Indian songs, chants, vocables, the no-meaning sounds. These vocables here on the board have no intrinsic meaning. They're not translatable. This is like the last part of Deck the Halls with Boughs of Holly. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Only this is the vocable sound which comes from the Seneca Indian language in New York. If you'll bring some chairs in. Okay. And this is the point of my message to you, and the same message that I've been imparting to a lot of people who are concerned with education. There's a tremendous potential here simply because there is such a very rich heritage. And in your classroom, utilize materials and more materials. Many of these are available on the market, but be wary of things that are on the market from the curio stores, from the wholesale houses, because many times they do not represent the true elements or the artifacts that come from the culture itself. These things are not available. You can go out to the pueblos, you can go out to certain places, the craftsmen. This is the source. Go back to the original. Go back to the singers. Go back to the ladies of the tribe who know some lullabies. Learn these songs. Learn courtesy phrases in the Indian language. Learn how to eat, say, if you're in North Dakota or South Dakota. Who knows what these are? These are roots called timshila, which the Sioux Indian children readily identify. They gather these in the early spring, and they hang them in this manner, and they're good for 2 years. They can hang up in the house preserved, dried like this for 2 years. When they're ready to eat, they put them in a pot, cook them, put some meat in, and they're delicious, just tremendous. These are called wild turnips, Indian turnips. At the Institute, every year, we have a Indian cookout. The Snohomish, Umatilla, Columbia River Indians of the Pacific Coast send home for some salmon. We have smoked salmon. The Jicarillas donate a couple of deer. We have venison. We have buffalo. We have sour corn from the Creek Indians, the Softkey and Canuche. The Navajos butcher some sheep, and we have mutton stew and fried bread. And so the culture can be discovered through food, through the visual elements. As you see here, I've displayed some drapery material designed by a young art student at the Institute of American Indian Arts, and for illustration about where he got his design, you see here the Navajo Yay rug. And he's taken the same design motif and stylized it into a fabric design. The cloth covering the table is a stylized design of a bear track in the mud, and it's printed with silk screen onto a fabric to make a curtain or an upholstery. So that Indian art, Indian design, Indian music, Indian stories, lore has potential in every area, in art, in music, in drama, in design, in interior decorating, whatever it may be. And the young people that you're working with have a rich heritage upon which to draw. And this heritage will serve them as a strength point in their lives. When they get to about 13, 14, to around the age of puberty, generally the young Indian student of today wonders who he is, where he came from, and where can he go in this world. Must the Indian be a white man to survive? This is the question that faces a lot of our teenagers who are young Indians.